encouraged, not burdened by the history that they create. They know what is expected of them. They are Manchester United.
Welcome in, listeners, to another episode of the 3D Fledglings podcast. Nathan Heintzel, back in the, in the audio flesh here, after missing a couple weeks, taking over hosting duties for Colin, who will be on later. He is currently driving home from work as we, but we needed to start recording sooner than that. Join with me as
love that in a recorded podcast? It's like, no, we got to go without you.
Yeah, no. We got to, well, and then I like that we're doing the play-by-play. So, you know, we're trying to be transparent for the listeners, show them how the sausage is made. At the artist formerly known as the Busby Bay podcast. So I obviously haven't been on the pod in a little bit. I was in the process of moving. Since then, we had a little bit of a break, and now Manchester United have extended their streak as the most informed team in the Premier League right now after a 3-0 win at Everton. Paulie, let's bring the mood down by talking about how Everton had almost three times as many shots as United in that game.
That's where you want to start?
Well, so
there are like good things to talk about from this game.
There's plenty of good things. So I
wouldn't say plenty. I would say there are good things, plural, to talk about.
Plenty is relative to how the rest of the season's gone, where we've had like no good things to talk about. And this one, United, notoriously slow starting, decided to, you know, set up Alejandro Garnacho to score possibly the, or most likely the Premier League goal of the season in the, what was that, the third minute, the fourth minute, and kind of just, you know, completely took the sting out of the building. Because Everton, I don't know if for the rest of the chronically online people, you probably saw the term bear pit said a lot or typed out a lot. Certainly they talked about it a lot on the Talk of the Devils podcast, specifically the term bear pit. Obviously, Everton going through some issues with the Premier League right now, and the fans are ready to protest it, and probably rightly so. But Manchester United had a job to do, and they took care of business.
Yeah, so the negative, I guess if we want to be negative, the negative way to look at it is, what's the point of watching the rest of the year? Because you're not going to see a nicer goal than Garnacho's. Just no point. Why do it? We've peaked. That's the peak. Close the
Pack
contest.
Up the Puskás Awards. It's over.
Close the contest now. It's done. You will not find a nicer. What's the point in any United player even trying to score a goal the rest of the season? It's not going to win goal of the season.
Well, now Garnacho is going to try and score like a scorpion or something just to top himself.
Or he's going to hold a Ronaldo and just try to do a bicycle kick every freaking time it's like even remotely acceptable. There is a pattern here that Colin and I talked about in the last few shows, and I spoke about it with people on Sunday. It reminded, especially when you saw the way the rest of the first half played out, it reminded me of, or United are starting to remind me, because you think about the Copenhagen match where Rasmus Højlund scores 2 minutes into the game, I think, something like that, on like a nice tap-in, very well-worked goal, and then 25 minutes later, you're like, hey, United haven't had a shot since.
And are you guys going to do any more of that offense thing you started off with?
Yeah, and against Luton, he missed that chance early, and then it was like similar, like, hey, United haven't had a shot since. And against Fulham, McTominay scores that early goal on the set piece that gets called back for offside, and then it's like 30 minutes later, it's like, hey, we going to shoot again? And it's just reminding me of United under Van Gaal, where they had that run of games where they would just pulverize or swarm the opposition net like the first 2 minutes of the game and get a bunch of chances, like 2, 3, 4 chances. And then they wouldn't score. And you'd be like, wow, this is great. We're attacking. And then they wouldn't score on any of them. And then after like 2 minutes, you know, the game would kind of settle down into like this more possession. And then by like 5 minutes, you were like, oh, crap, like that was it for the day, like we're not gonna generate any more attack. And that seems to be what United have fallen, this trap that United have fallen into. The difference was yesterday they didn't even create a good chance. They created a horrible chance that they created no chance that Alejandro Garnacho somehow turned into a sensational goal. And then afterwards, it was not, 10 minutes later, Luke Shaw gets a shot off of a corner, and that was it for the first half.
Yeah, I think the way the first half progressed, it was really starting to become the Thanos meme. Like, you were just waiting for Everton to get that first goal and maybe a second goal. And then it was going to be like, you're looking at Alejandro Garnacho as like, all that for just a drop of blood.
Right.
But
right. There was I didn't catch much of halftime, but what I did catch was the studio people saying this was, it just seemed like, and I thought they were right. It seemed like for 10 minutes after that goal, both teams were just completely phased. Like, what the hell did we just witness? Did that actually just happen? And then Luke Shaw gets that shot off the corner and Everton kind of woke up and were like, right, there's a football game going on. And from then on, it was all Everton, and United could not handle it at all.
And to pull another positive then out of that whole being all Everton, we can point to a couple key moments in the first half and give some flowers for overall performances, both to Andre Onana, who I think really had a nice game and goal, made a couple really quality saves after, I think, at least there was the narrative brewing, if it wasn't outright just in your face, where, people were starting to wonder about shot stopping abilities. And, as it relates to that, I don't know that we were ever wondering if we should have gotten rid of David De Gea, but, certainly some questions came up. And then on top of that too, you had Kaby Mainoo, who has a really, really excellent goal line clearance after, I think, Onana made a double save, but the defense wasn't able to clear it out. And so then Kaby had to stop one right there at the death. And he overall,
I can't believe we're going to bring up Kaby. Like, that's how you're going to introduce Kaby Mainoo.
Well, we were talking about, with
I would say from the moment they lined up for Garnacho's goal, after Garnacho's goal, this became Alejandro who? It was all about Kaby Mainoo. It was his long-awaited debut. You guys were with me at the Meadowlands over the summer.
2-0 against Arsenal.
I had a lot to drink that day, but basically the entire match, I was just screaming Kaby Mainoo. Like, that's who I was here to see. That's who we've all been waiting for him. And he was as advertised, and he delivered.
By the way, I'm here now.
Oh, hey, welcome, Colin.
What do you want to say about Kaby Mainoo? Go ahead.
First of all, I want to apologize for my lateness. I did not realize the Christmas parade was happening today in my town, which essentially cuts my town in half in terms of car movement. In terms of what I thought about Kaby Mainoo, I agree with what Polly wrote. You should go check out his tactical analysis. He addresses a lot of questions that Manchester United's midfield have. I think my first impression is worry. And I had this a little bit before he was even fit, that we kind of knew what he was going to bring, like you said, based on preseason. We kind of knew the role that he was going to slot into. I'm really worried that we're going to quickly develop an overdependency on him. That
implies that we haven't done that yet.
Yeah, that's why, like, I had this worry before he even played a full Premier League 90. And especially at, the time of year that we're entering, there's a very good chance that, he's already our most important player.
I was very happy when they scored the second goal yesterday, because I said you cannot let Kaby Mainoo play 90 minutes on his Premier League debut. He's returning from an injury, and I was very worried for what happens to this team when Kaby Mainoo comes off the field.
That's one thing Mitchell Vanderhaag did better than Erik ten Hag was managing.
Again, like I've said this, I've said this all season. The one thing I can't get on ten Hag for is he has stayed true with Rasmus Højlund and been like, we got to manage his minutes. And it's like, United need a goal after 72 minutes. Like, sorry, big guy's coming off. Can't play him more.
Shout out to Mitch, too, by keeping the, you know, the policy alive. We saw Kaby Mainu in the game. We saw Amrabat sub in to the game for Kaby Mainu. Saw Hannibal Mejbri make it into the game. And we saw Donny van de Beek on the bench the whole game.
I'm worried, like, I texted this to you guys yesterday, and I said to a bunch of people, like, we're going to – Ten Hag's going to come out and speak after the game and if he's smart, try to, like, downplay it and downplay how important Kaby Mainu is to this team and say things like, we have to watch his minutes, and he's probably not ready to start twice a week, et cetera, and all those things. And then I'm like, yeah, you'll say all that. And then I'm going to look at Kaby Mainu's minutes on January 1st. I'm going to look at Kaby Mainu's minutes for like the month of December, and I'm just going to see 90, 90, 90, 90, 81, 90, 90. And on January 1st, after the New Year's Eve match, when it's like Kaby Mainu has done his hamstring, and everybody's going to be like, we're cursed. How did another player get hurt? It's going to be like, well, look at that. Like, because you look at, we're playing Galatasaray on Wednesday. How do you not start Kaby Mainu, who should not start? Because I don't think he's ready to play twice a week. And that's a quick turnaround to send him to start in Turkey in that atmosphere is crazy. You got Newcastle at the weekend, probably the more important game because you're up against it in the Champions League anyway. But also maybe a Turkish team is probably a better scenario for Kaby Mainu to play in than maybe at Newcastle. Are you winning against, or and maybe you're going to lose against Newcastle anyway.
That's without even like acknowledging the urgency of the Galatasaray game.
But it's also acknowledging, but now when that's just looking at the Kaby Mainu situation. Now look at the rest of the situation. Who playing? You don't have Casemiro. You don't have Eriksen. You don't have your midfield. So you have McTominay. Rashford suspended. You have McTominay. You have Bruno. Okay. Put those two guys down in pen. Amrabat, who like basically has been subbed off after 45 minutes every time he starts recently. I guess it's either him or Kaby Mainu. Donny van de Beek, not eligible to play. Like, who's starting up front? You've got Garnacho. You've got Højlund is hurt, so it's basically got to be Martial. And then I guess Antony has to come in the team. Mason Mount is hurt. Rashford suspended. Donny van de Beek, not eligible to play. Like, who could even play in this match?
The three of us.
I don't know if I can get to Turkey in time.
I don't know if I want to go to Turkey.
I was going to say that. I was going to say that, but I didn't want one of you to be like, if Manchester United gave you the opportunity to play in Turkey, you're not taking it. And I'd be like, am I getting a first class ticket, or are they flying me out there and coach?
I'd be like, how about Bournemouth?
Well, we're definitely staying in a Marriott Bonvoy.
Right. Will I get to the game on time?
Congratulations, yes. You've won the chance to represent Manchester United in their sixth and meaningless Champions League fixture.
We will give you a shirt for this, but we won't tell you whose shirt it is.
Hey, better Istanbul than Astana. That's what I always say.
Yeah. As Colin alluded to, the piece I wrote today was about how good Kaby Mainu is and the things he does that we just don't have a midfielder to do. And he answered a really important question for us today, because up until today, people have been making excuses for why United stink. Like, well, they're missing players and we don't have the right players and we don't have a midfielder and Mainu's been hurt and Shaw's been out. And it's all been a bunch of baloney, but Sunday confirmed that, because Luke Shaw was back. Kaby Mainu was in there putting in the best midfield performance we've seen all season long, and one of the best ones we've seen in the last however many years. And United were still garbage. And they were garbage because their tactical setup is garbage. That is now, it's now that. It's it. And I tweeted this last week, was Luke Shaw will be big return, a big boost for United. But like, how effective he is determined by how much United let him be Luke Shaw. So one of the things Luke Shaw is really good at is providing an overlapping option. they didn't let him do that. Like, yeah. What are we doing?
Like, it took like 60 minutes for them to be like, oh, right, Rashford and Shaw are good when they, you know, link up together. And even then it was like, you know, Rashford was like, Garnacho didn't permanently switch. They went back to the positions they'd started in.
Well, part of that is that they don't want Garnacho to play on the right wing because they want to fully develop him on the left wing, and they don't want to do what they did to Martial and Rashford. And there's a that's fair logic. Like, you can't really argue with that logic. Like, that actually checks out. But yeah, then you end up with a situation like that. Like, I don't think Marcus Rashford should play on the right wing next to Anthony Martial. Is Marcus Rashford should play on the right wing next to Rasmus Højlund. When Martial's is the striker, Rashford should be on the left wing. But that goes back to who's going to play right wing then?
And who's going to score our overhead kicks?
Right. But you didn't even let Shaw overlap. And the buildup structure has been atrocious all year. And people have been saying, well, there's nobody, you don't have Lisandro Martinez to step forward with the ball, as if like the buildup structure was unbelievable last year when Martinez was in the team. United were better, moved the ball. United moved the ball better and created more chances when Martinez wasn't in the team last year. You finally add someone in Kaby Mainoo who can drop deep and receive the ball, and not just that, but turn and face forward and then be composed and not rush things. And just take what the defense gives him. Like, okay, I'm going to turn and I'm just going to split the defenders and I'm going to break the line myself and carry it to the next level. And we saw him do that. And then what do we see? No options ahead of him. So it was like, oh, we finally got over that hurdle of you can't break the first line, only to find out like, oh, it turns out the second line and third line is just as impossible there because we tell our players to stand in dumb positions and we're not utilizing them to the best of our ability. And that's going to be United's biggest issue going forward the rest of the season.
I was going to ask Nathan, because when I do the live tweets, I feel like I'm pretty plugged into the timeline. Like, how much of what you were seeing was Garnacho reaction and then immediately like Kobe Mainoo reaction, like throughout the 90 minutes? Because I felt like it almost like symbolized our desperation for a player like him, just like how amazed we were that somebody could receive the ball and turn and pass the ball forward.
I mean, to be honest with you, so when I'm doing the live tweeting, I usually don't follow the main feed too much. I've got a couple people that I'm always looking for, obviously our tweets, you know, when Colin's put anything out, Paulie's put anything out. You know, the real boss, Brent Maximin, whenever he's putting something out, you know, trying to re-echo any of those things. I'm going to be honest with you. I was having a little bit of a meltdown in the first half as it started to get a little bit worse and worse. And we were, you know, chatting in the group chat and I was doing a lot of shit posting. I'm going to just keep it a buck, in that first half. And then as things starting to lighten up, I think it was right after Rashford hit the penalty, I was starting to see what the scuttlebutt was on Twitter. But yeah, I think
I'll say this: the reaction about having a midfielder that can do these things, these very seemingly simple things, is that not a lot of people can do them. Like, this is not Kaby Mainoo coming in and just being like, wow. Someone just like these things seem very simple and they are not. It is not easy. Like, one of the things that impressed me the most about Kaby Mainoo is that he knows exactly how much time he has on the ball, but his internal clock is calibrated correctly. Whereas there's a lot of people who know that I have 3 seconds here, but you ask them, but to them, 3 seconds is 1, 2, 3. Whereas Mainoo goes, I have 3 seconds, and he knows 3 seconds is 1, 2, 3. And he uses 2.9 of them to get rid of the ball. And instead of that internal clock.
You have to be constantly moving while you're making those decisions. I think it was when I was editing your piece and you shared one where he basically turned through two defenders and suddenly there was this space. And not only did he have, you know, space like that he created, but he immediately recognized the windows of opportunity and made a decision within, you know, the 3 seconds of turn, monitor, pass. Like, just that decisiveness is not something United have at any position, you know.
And it's not something you could teach.
A little bit of a luxury. Yeah.
It's not something you could teach. Like, he is, that's a special talent that you've got. And now you got to hope that everything else pans out, that he continues to develop in the other areas. I mean, this was a kid who, he didn't shy away from anything. He was running, he held his position incredibly well. He's like the complete opposite of Sofyan Amrabat in that Amrabat sees ball, wants ball, sucked out of position all the time. McTominay the same way. He's just like, nah, I got Dalo got caught up the field. All right, I gotta go be a right back right now. Luke Shaw, there's some combination on the left side. All right, I gotta go be a left back. And that, I think, was it the Martial penalty? Yeah, I think it was the Martial penalty where right before that, Maguire had gone and made a run forward, had made a run and followed it by making another run, and Rashford didn't give him the ball. And then Everton went back the other way, and you're like, oh crap, like one of our defenders got, but Kai Manu is right there at right center back. And he makes the initial, United win the ball back. He makes the outlet pass to Maguire, who then feeds it to Martial, who starts that run where he charges forward. It's knowing that, but, and he defended 1v1 very well, but like, yeah, there's other things that he went for a lot of headers, didn't win them. He's small. He gets bullied off, but like, you have to hope that all those things happen and that when teams figure him out, you know, he can adapt to that. And most of all, that he stays fit. How many promising players don't make it for no other, you know, have everything right, the work ethic, the intangibles, the talent, everything, and just can't stay fit.
A former United player who was like that was on the opposite side of the field during that game.
That former United player, second best midfielder on the pitch on Sunday. James Garner pulled the strings that entire match. And that's probably like one of the concerning things, not necessarily that James Garner was doing it, was how much United struggled against Everton. And when Everton started to press United, they were faltering, they were wiltering, they were overwhelmed by it. And what's the excuse now? Because in the past, you could say, well, David De Gea is vulnerable to a press because he's not good with his feet. And Rafael Varane, vulnerable to a press because he's not comfortable with the ball at his feet. Aaron Wan-Bissaka, vulnerable to a press because he's not comfortable with the ball at his feet. United had four of their best five ball-playing defenders on the pitch. Alessandro Martinez is the only one they're missing. I'm like, Harry Maguire is very clearly their second best, if not pushing the best. Victor Lindelof is very much their third best. Shaw's their best ball-handling left back. Dalot's the best ball-handling right back. Your goalkeeper way better with his feet than he was last year, and these guys couldn't handle the press at all. United couldn't get the ball out of their own third. And for as good as Mainoo was doing it, showing the ball, they weren't moving it from one end of the pitch to the other. And that's the deep concern, is it's, again, just week after week, United scraping by, doing just enough to get the win against these teams that they should be beating, and they should be beating thoroughly. And like, they've, as I wrote last week, they've put themselves in this position where if they turn it around and actually start beating teams in the top half of the table, they could really establish themselves as a top four team. But nothing suggests that they're going to do that. And if they continue to play to form, these top half teams are going to kill them.
Yeah, I mean, they're 4 points out of the top four. They're 6 points off the top, which... It's kind of like, you know, those seasons when we were chasing top four where you're like, oh, that doesn't seem so bad.
We're not using the T word.
Yeah. No, we're no. That's not where I was going, Nate. But it can be a little bit deceiving looking at things that way, because, you know, like we've mentioned in previous weeks, the schedule very much reflects whether we're playing a team above us or whether we're playing a team below us. We've looked, in the most literal sense, mid. And it's going to take more than, you know, a 3-0 win like this against Everton to kind of sway that. Although, there were plenty of opportunities for this game to go south, and they didn't. And I think,
half time, we were all just sitting around being like, thank God Everton are absolutely crap.
Yeah.
Because this was another, and this happened so often last year, of United didn't, yes, David De Gea made saves last year, and Andre Onana made some big saves today, but a lot of times, these teams just didn't finish, and they just missed simple chances. Doucouré had there was a cutback to Doucouré where he sliced it wide, where I don't think they gave Lindelof enough credit for, like, getting into perfect position on that. That's something that kind of escapes the numbers. I thought, like, if you look at it, if Doucouré puts that anywhere on target, it probably gets blocked by Lindelof. Like, he got his angles perfectly. But, you know, United are 1 point better this year after 13 games than they were last year.
Not only that, they have one more point than Newcastle, who has 17 more goals on their goal difference.
But let's...
Hey, we're at zero. We no longer have negative goal difference.
Let's put some context around that, though. Obviously, this isn't the best way to do it. There's some flaws in this math, but the average position in the table right now of the teams United have played this year is 12th. After 13 games last year, the average position, based on where they finished the season, last year was 9.46. And that factors in that Chelsea were considered 12th when, at the beginning of the season, when United faced them, they were much higher up the table. So that's a pretty big difference. Their schedule was much more difficult last year than what they've faced this year. And for the purposes of this math, we considered Everton to be in 14th, which would have reflected where they were without the 10-point deduction. And it's still, your average position is 12. They are also, they might be 1 point better than last year, but they're also off the pace from last year. If you take the corresponding fixtures to what they've played this year, they have taken fewer points in those than what they did last year. And six of their next seven games are against teams in the top half of the table.
Also, United does not have a draw yet.
And, oh, by the way, in between those six and seven games, they have to go to Turkey and play Bayern Munich.
Yeah. I don't even know if we're going to make the Europa League, guys.
I've been talking about this with people.
Don't got to worry about the League Cup, at least.
It's are you talking about making the Europa League, like, for next year, or dropping,
like,
into the Europa League?
No, like,
year?
By finishing third. So this is my question, if
we finish in the Europa League, obviously we're playing a lot of Sunday games in the first half of the year. Not a fan of that, but if we don't make the Europa League, you know, they will very quickly, like, Tottenham us and basically be like, oh, you guys are Monday and Friday now. So it's, would you rather Sundays or would you rather Friday and Mondays?
Well, like, if we're going to be in the Europa League in the spring, that's when my Sundays, like, they kind of free up. Like, you know, there's not NFL, so I don't have to, like, you know, watch the Browns or anything. But I do have my adult league that starts in, like, February. So
if you're going to go into the Europa League, like losing the playoff round.
Just
losing the playoffs,
but again, you
watch how fast they're going to be like, oh, we're doing a Friday night game this week, and they'll be like, well, United don't have any midweek fixtures, so we'll put them there, and oh, Monday night football, going to be United again, so that kind of stinks. But yeah, December going to be a really tough month, and it's really going to be an interesting question to see how Erik ten Hag handles it, especially given everything that's going on within his dressing room right now. I mean, what's saving him is that he's pulling results out of his ass, but you got to start shoring things up.
Yeah.
Man, what are we going to do without a World Cup size break in between games?
Well, we're going to keep watching.
The same thing that we would do even if we had a World Cup size break in between games is we'd pick the same 11 and keep running them out there.
By the way, there is a buyback clause in James Garner's Everton contract, supposedly.
Is there now?
So it was reported by Fabrizio Romano initially. That was when the transfer was completed, when he first moved to Everton. So take it with, you know, whatever grain of salt or, you know, spice you want to take that with. But it would make sense because it wasn't.
Is it more or less than like the $9 million that Everton paid?
So there was no reported number for the buyback clause.
I would not spend money to buy back James Garner. I thought James Garner was brilliant on Sunday.
Yeah.
Let's make things clear though. He is playing for Everton. It is difficult.
He was playing against us.
He was playing against us, but the thing was, we were the ones sitting deep, and he was moving the ball very well and effective like that, which is sort of actually the way that, like, normally it's like, it's hard to grade these guys because we are the ones swarming them, and they just, when they get the ball, it's like, hey, play it forward, and we're going to run on the counterattack, and it's like, oh, okay, like, you can do that. You can defend, you can play it forward, you can play it quickly, but can you do that when we have to take the game to the other team? And he was the one taking the game to the other team. But it's only one game. Could he do that consistently? I don't know. Like, ultimately, like, James Garner would be, he's not taking United to the next level. He's a squad player, but like, he's a very valuable squad player to have. When everybody gets hurt, like, imagine if Kobbie Mainoo got hurt right now, like, would you not want to have James Garner sitting there, like an academy kid in James Garner sitting on your bench, like ready to go, rather than 35 million of dead space of Donny van de Beek? Like, that's a much more useful use of that roster spot if you're putting in James Garner.
Yeah.
But you can't spend money to get that back. That's your problem.
Honestly,
if you made the decision to let him go, you let him go.
Unless there is like a Saudi Arabia recession, you know, bailout package arriving in January, United can't spend money anyway, like at all.
and unless that recession bailout package comes in the summer, they can't really spend money next summer either, because Casemiro's taking up a large chunk of dead cap space on that team. And
right,
probably not, you know, the hope is that Kobbie Mainoo just takes that spot, and at least you're getting, and that he's not just takes the spot, but he is performing at an extremely high level, and at least you're getting very high output from, you know, offsetting, you're still getting like that superstar output even without any of the costs.
Yeah. I do think a question that will emerge over the next few matches is, you know, when there are players available for selection, what midfield partner actually like suits Kobbie Mainoo best? I think most of us knew the answer, but I think yesterday I kind of confirmed Scott McTominay is probably not the best option to partner Mainoo with. But, you know, it's a little.
Is it Sofyan Amrabat though? Like, is it Casemiro?
Yeah, it's like slim pickings right now.
I'd
be interested in maybe Casemiro, because if Kobbie Mainoo is doing all the stuff that he was supposed to do, you know, maybe he doesn't look as overexposed as he did earlier this season. But, you know, Kobbie Mainoo doesn't change the fact that Casemiro has 31-year-old legs with a lot of mileage on them.
Right, you'd essentially be putting Casemiro into this McTominay role, and I think he'd be better at it than McTominay. But like, you're paying Casemiro a lot of money to be that defensive midfielder, and then be like, ah, we're not going to use you as a defensive midfielder. We're going to use you as this.
You're going to be Marouane Fellaini.
Yeah, you're going to be the guy who doesn't have build-up responsibilities. Granted, that's what they did at Real Madrid. They're like, we're going to drop Luka Modric here, and Toni Kroos is going to be next to him. And you're going to be able to make these runs into the box, get on the end of things. He has a bit more passing chops further up the pitch than McTominay does, so maybe that helps. I think McTominay's size, like what's dictating him and what's allowing him to be there. Defensively, though, you're still playing this kind of man-to-man marking system, which just allows people like McTominay or Casemiro or Amrabat to be dragged out of position when they follow their man, which leaves people exposed and leaves and everything, which means it doesn't really matter where you're playing Casemiro, because you're not just having him sit there and hold. He's going to pick up a man. He's going to be dragged out of position. And because I don't think you're going to send Mainu further forward in the attack. I think you'd rather Casemiro do that. It's a whole big question, because also, like, should we be doing this man-to-man marking thing? It hasn't worked. It worked last year when Casemiro was able to clean up the mess for you, but like, it wasn't, that was just wrapping, you know, that was putting a bow on a nice empty box. Like, it wasn't actually substantial. What are we still doing?
How do we think Frankie De Jong would partner with Kaby Mainu?
We're a third of the way through.
We'll fire up FIFA and find out.
How do we think Kaby Mainu compliments Antoine Griezmann?
Let's not get started on.
Don't even go there. We're a quarter of the way through the season, and United have like regressed badly in all their underlying numbers. It's a problem.
Seems bad.
Yeah,
seems bad.
I'm sure that's not related at all to coaching.
Right, or all these reports that there's a player disgruntled here and a player disgruntled there, all that's definitely made up. It's definitely a happy camp here and a team that's vastly underperforming.
Yeah. Although, like, if we have to move Varane and Casemiro in January, at least now we kind of realize that we could live without them. It's just depth becomes a problem at that point.
I mean, we have to move them, period. Like, we're operating under the assumption that these reports that are written in a way that's exactly what United fans want to hear are true, that there's some semblance of truth to them, that Saudi Arabia is going to come hard in January for players, that Saudi Arabia is still interested in doing this. Like, they might reevaluate their product. We spoke about this. They might reevaluate their process, because, you know, hundreds of people are turning out to their matches.
They might start spending money on people to just put them in the stadium so it looks like they're right to go to watch their games.
Well,
Varane's been like linked with a move to Germany. Teams like that don't go for players in the middle of the season.
Maybe, El Nasser wants to rebuild the 2018 Real Madrid Champions League team.
They probably do, but also
they'll get Gareth Bale out of retirement. They'll get Casemiro.
Oh yeah, you want to put Gareth Bale and Cristiano Ronaldo back in the same team?
Let's do it.
There's also limits as to how many. I think you can only have like four foreign players, in a team in Saudi Arabia, and only four teams are controlled by the PIF.
I'm pretty sure they're changing those rules, though.
They probably are.
Al Nasser has like a lot of foreign players now.
Only four teams are controlled by like the PIF, so it's only four teams that are operating with unlimited money. I think it's an option, and I hope it happens, but I wouldn't be like expecting the Casemiro and Varane bailout, and certainly not in January.
There was another one that was like FC Sao Paulo are trying to bring in Antony on
like
loan.
Antony, yeah. Like, well, again, this is the time of the year where, like, that last international break where it's like, players you don't want to see here are all... remember that Manchester United will accept a bid for Anthony Martial if they get one. I'm like, of course they will. They've been ready to do that for 4 years now. They haven't gotten one.
All that Saudi money that got splashed around, and the only player we got off the books was Alex Telles. Like, that sucks.
For like nothing. I mean, for a pizza.
You got to start somewhere, though.
It's nice that they got rid of Alex Telles, but like, what happened? Yeah. Then we went and signed a new left back anyway.
Maybe LAFC wants to pair Varane with Chiellini.
We went and signed a new left back rather than an emergency left back, because our two left backs were hurt, rather than be like, oh, we have an academy kid who looked really good in the preseason. Let's see what he can do. And if we need to loan him out in January, we can loan him out in January. But instead it was like, nah, let's go and sign one, which tells you everything you need to know about how we value, how this, how this coaching staff values youth in this setup and promoting from the academy.
I thought the coaching staff was taking over the academy.
They did, but
you remember that?
You know how many academy players have made their debut under Ten Hag?
Is it two?
It's three. There was somebody came on as a left back in the League Cup last year, but otherwise it's just Dan Gorn, Cubby Manu. Jose Mourinho had six in his first season, and I know he had a dead rubber game where he just threw everybody out there, but
gosh, Harrop.
Yeah. But Ten Hag had the same opportunities to do that last year and didn't.
Yeah. I remember Louis van Gaal had a lot because there was literally
opportunity. He basically put out six debuts in his first game. He was and changing the academy.
There was one game where we had Tyler Blackett and Cameron Borthwick Jackson.
It was his first game.
Yeah.
Lingard made his debut in his first game and he also got hurt in that game. Paddy McNair, Fosu Mensah, that whole defensive line, he just kept. Borthwick Jackson had an extended run on the team, as did Paddy McNair. Paddy McNair started against Liverpool. What were we doing?
Paddy McNair.
We're bringing up Paddy McNair, that seems like a good time to end the pod.
Yeah. I was going to say we may try to do later this week if there is pertinent things to talk about with the Champions League. I'm just kind of expecting
are we still alive?
We lose that game. Yeah. But otherwise, yeah. We recorded when we said we would, Polly. We did it. Finally.
You almost missed it.
I know. but yeah. It was good job by Nathan taking over hosting duties.
Hey, I do what I can.
Yeah.
Now that I'm done moving, life's back to normal.
Yeah. You got a nice new home office set up.
Yeah, it's also my game room and the spare bedroom.
A game room. That's nice. I got a nice new desk out of my move. So I've got more space here, which is nice.
Does the elevator in the place that you're living now, Polly, work?
It works. It works.
That's good. How's the AC doing?
The AC is working. It is winter. I don't have as much sun, so it doesn't get as much. It doesn't get as hot in here during the day, which is also really nice. It's actually I could wear a hoodie right now and be comfortable. I could not do that in my last apartment.
You move recently, Colin? You want to box yourself?
Don't do it, Colin. It's not worth it, but also try to move to the same time zone as us.
Yeah, have you considered the East Coast, Colin?
I have. It would be cool.
Yeah.
Also really probably cool. Expensive.
No. You find something in the Carolinas that isn't too pricey.
Find a nice $2,000 studio somewhere.
You would find that in Charlotte.
Yeah. So ever since I went to New York, I've started getting on my TikTok feed or the Instagram reels or whatever, New York apartment tours. And I think my phone is reading my mind a little bit, but we'll see. yeah. If that's all we got, we should probably end the podcast soon. Whoever is recording, it's your responsibility to send it to me so I can upload.
Excellent. Well, I guess we'll end the pod here. My usual sign off recommendation, Blue Eye Samurai on Netflix is very cool. You should all watch it. Ta-ta.
Don't watch Napoleon if you read history.